Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. I'd also like to inform parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Lauren Sulkowski. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Great. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for the Administration for Community Living's Business Acumen webinar on workflow design. This is Lauren Sulkowski with ACL, and I will be facilitating our webinar today. So for today's webinar, we have invited Krista Boston with the Minnesota Board on Aging to present on workflow design. She'll talk about some of the important stakeholders that should be involved in the process, as well as development and implementation of a workflow model. So before we begin with her presentation, I have a few housekeeping announcements. So first of all, let's see, if you could please use the link included in your calendar appointment to get on to the WebEx. So that you can not only follow along with the slides as we go through them, but also to ask your questions when you have them through the chat function. If you don't have access to the link that was emailed, you can also go to www.webex.com, click on the Attend a Meeting button that is located at the top of the page, and then from there you can enter the meeting number. Today's meeting number is 663-388-582. Again, today's meeting number is 663-388-582. If you have any other problems getting onto the WebEx, please call the technical support number at 1-866-569-3239. Again, that number is 1-866-569-3239. As our operator had mentioned, all of our participants are in a listen-only mode. However, we do welcome your questions throughout the course of the webinar, and there are two ways that you can ask your questions, the first of which is through the chat function in WebEx, located there on the right-hand side of your screen. You can enter your questions there throughout the presentation, and then once Krista has completed her presentation, we will sort through them and answer your questions. In addition to the chat function, you can also ask your questions through the audio line. When that time comes, our operator will provide instructions for us as to how to queue up to ask your question. And then lastly, if there aren't any questions that we cannot answer during the course of the webinar, please feel free to email them to me. I have entered my email address in the chat box there on the screen. And also, we are recording the webinar. We will post the recording of the webinar, the slides, and the transcript on the ACL website, as well as on the MLTSS network website. And I've also entered those in the chat box as well. Okay, so with that, I would like to introduce our speaker, Krista Boston. Krista is the Director of Consumer Assistance Programs for the Minnesota Board on Aging and the Aging and Adult Services Division of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Krista's team manages the Senior Linkage Line and actively supports and partners with the Disability and Veterans Linkage Lines. Her work includes Minnesota's nationally recognized and award-winning MinnesotaHelp.info website, which now includes quality information, including consumer reviews, supports the linkage lines, and is also used by case managers and care coordinators to help people find home and community-based services. She has successfully launched several high-profile reform projects that lead to savings to the state budget, including most recently, she led the launch of a successful expansion of care transition supports through the Return to Community Initiatives, which helps privately paying elderly. Her team also launched a complete redesign of pre-admission screening and is now embarking on the creation of a registry for people needing personal care attendant services. So, Krista, thank you so much for joining us today. And with that, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate getting to talk to this group and look forward to the conversation. I also have with me today Stephanie Miner, who is one of my three designated leads for the Minnesota Help Network, and she oversees not only the redesign of the PASTAR system that was talked about there, but the senior linkage line in general. And she is our primary business modeler, and so she's going to get a chance to talk to you a little bit about what she does when she works her magic and creates workflows. So I was really pleased to be asked to talk about this because I got to tell you, this is probably one of the best things that I've ever done personally, both in personally and professionally, and that is just to, by mere happenstance and magic, discover business process modeling. And I'll tell you a little bit more about how that happened. First, if you would advance the slide, Lauren. One of my favorite quotes in the world, which is really kind of encapsulates performance management, and especially knowing that Winston Churchill, who really led large-scale government efforts, and what he said, how beautiful the strategy, you should, in fact, occasionally look at the results. And I think in government, we have that challenge. I know I am surrounded by idea people, great idea people, but they don't always want to do the implementation and look at the results. And I'm a very results-oriented person, and one of the wonderful things about these workflow design strategies is you can, in fact, get really clear on what you're designing and then look at the results. So if you go to the next slide. So why would you want to do workflow design? And I don't know what everybody's knowledge is in this area, so I'm going to assume that there's a basic knowledge, but I'm sure some of you have done this, so I want you to know I'm probably preaching to the choir for some of you. But workflow design is absolutely critical to have a successful product deploy. Whenever we're looking at designing anything in Minnesota with regard to the Minnesota Help Network, I always like to use the Coca-Cola test. And if any of you have heard me talk before, I use Coca-Cola a lot. Because to me, what we're developing and putting out the door, if you were in the corporate world, they wouldn't look at you any differently if you were developing a product to sell to health plans than if you're developing a product to put in a vending machine. So I always say if Coca-Cola wouldn't do this, neither would we, because they know how to sell Coca-Cola, and they know how to make people recognize it, and they generate revenue, so they're very good. And so when you look at product development, you have to be able to know what your productivity is, right? You have to be able to know what it costs, how many staff it takes, and then what it is that they're developing. And you also, I think, really importantly, have to know if there are errors in the process, because errors create costs for a company. And so if you want to make profit, you have to reduce your errors. And, of course, we know products succeed or fail based on whether or not they can market themselves and, as the slide says, distinguish themselves from the competition. And you're not going to know if you can do that if you're not clear on what is your product and what are the costs. And as I said, profitability is hampered by waste. So if you've got extra steps in the process, all you've done is created waste, and that's going to reduce your profit. And I'll talk a little bit about the lean Kaizen process and how it can improve that. And you won't be able to know what that waste is unless you know the process fully. So next slide. I went out for this presentation. I was looking for some sort of way to frame up how what I'm talking about fits into the product development process, because I'm going to be guessing that as a part of your business acumen discussions and technical assistance, you've gone through all of these things. And I know Lauren told me that you're all kind of at the point where you've decided that you've got a plan and you're ready to do some workflows, or may have done them already. And so sort of where does this fit in? And I found this 8-step process, there's others I'm sure, I thought this was really good. You know, you start with an idea, you figure out if it's good, you do some concept testing, you know, in government we call this piloting stuff, right? Then you do business analysis, you determine what the product costs and how to get out the door. Then you test the product, you do marketing, and then you do large-scale implementation, and then you evaluate, is this successful, are we making any money? And it's actually very similar to what we do in government, but just I know oftentimes we get stuck in the pilot phase, right? And so getting to that large-scale implementation is always the challenge. If you go to the next slide, I think where this fits in is under the business analysis section. This is where, you know, you have organizations bringing in business analysts, and we actually hire and contract for business analysts and bring them in. And they do a lot of work related to developing these kinds of workflow products, and then they develop requirements around them. And so that business analyst is really kind of a key person, and I don't really think government started using them until probably about 5 years ago, at least in Minnesota. You know, they weren't everywhere for sure, and they seem to be everywhere now. You know, it took a while to get project managers, and then the project managers started bringing in business analysts. Well, now they're practically taking up whole floors at the Department of Human Services. But that's really, I think, where this fits. So if you go to the next slide, you know, if you're going to develop a workflow and a good workflow design, you know, really, who are you looking to bring in? Well, I could sit here and say that you have to go out and find a business analyst and get them in here and train them up in what you're doing, but we've never done that, and there's good reason. You know, I'm a great believer that people that manage programs in the government sector must be able to do good program design, and they must be able to do good program analysis. And so long ago, historically, about, I want to say it was 2008, I started sending all of my team members to go take this lean training, which I'm going to talk about shortly, which really helped us start to think differently about how we do program design. So I actually don't think you need to go out and find a business analyst. And in fact, as I said, you know, Stephanie, who's sitting with me today presenting, is our primary business modeler, and she's got a master's in public policy and is the leader of the senior linkage line. She's never been a business analyst, only has she gotten some training and done this. She's got the skills, knowledge, skills, and abilities to do it. The other thing you have to have then is really good facilitation skills, especially if you're going to bring in stakeholders and engage large groups and do these workflow designs. So as I say here on this slide, really anyone can do business process modeling, frankly. But there are some caveats. They have to be an organized thinker. They have to be able to develop a logic model or a process model on the fly, discussing it with different people. And that does take some interesting skills. It's not everybody can do it. In fact, if you decide to do this in-house, you may want to kind of find an interesting set of talents that you have to come up with. It's somebody that can facilitate a group, but it also has detail skills and can be consistent and constant in their approach to working with this kind of information. They have to have good documentation skills, and you can send them to business process modeling training, and they'll come back and hopefully be, you know, able to do this. There are still others that could participate in the process, but maybe they don't have the skills to do it. Well, those are people that, hey, if they can type something into Word, they can type it into a Visio diagram. So I will have them maybe on the side doing documentation. And there may be still others whose job it is to sit in the audience and walk the microphone around if you need a microphone because of the setting you're in. So I try to use my entire team and their skills to do these business process modeling sessions, but not everybody is actually doing the modeling. So know that. There is a certain set of skills. They have to be able to get into the details of a program and really translate what is very, very abstract and coming out of people's mouths abstractly oftentimes, and then put it into details. And that's a special skill. As I say here on the slide, they have to be able to ask critical questions in a non-threatening way. You know, you're standing up in front of a bunch of stakeholders, and I will tell you, we have brought in I hate to use the word hostile because I wouldn't say that, but they're interested in what we're doing, kind of stakeholders, and they're asking what can be really kind of, you know, probing questions about our work, and we have to facilitate the discussion and be able to ask them critical questions to really get to what they're asking us to do. And that's a special skill. It really does take facilitation skills. And then you have to be able to challenge your stakeholders. I'll tell you, we've brought in administrators of nursing homes and nursing home discharge planners and social workers into a room, and they were not happy with us. They thought we were going to be putting a gate up at the nursing home and not letting people out or not letting people in, right? And they were very worried about losing revenue. And after a three-day process and really kind of getting into what were their real concerns, we were able to get to a good program design that rolled out flawlessly. But we had them at the table, and we ask them those critical questions. So you have to bring that good facilitator in to do that. So next slide, a little bit more about our lean efforts. So lean is something that's being used out in various industries right now. It really came out of manufacturing, and prior to that, it came out of Toyota, and it was called Kaizen. And we started using these lean approaches in aging in 2010, and that was because we had an initiative called Return to Community that passed the legislature, and what we were doing was trying to help people who are privately paying. So this is like MFP, Money Follows the Person, but they're privately paying people. They're not on Medicaid, and we wanted them to return home, and we were going to help them do that, and we had some research information we'd gotten from the University of Minnesota and from the University of Indiana through Drs. Greg Arling and Dr. Bob Kane, and we had learned that there were people that should have returned home that didn't. And we were trying to figure out why, because these are high-need people. They should have gone home. And so we designed a process and got some funding to start helping people move home. And as you can imagine, that's a pretty detailed map, business process map, that has a lot of risk associated with it, and it had a lot of interested people in the room. As I said, we had nursing homes, we had discharge planners, not only nursing home administrators, but we had administrators here at the state that were involved, but also at nursing homes, and then we had social workers and discharge planners, and then we had advocates who were, you know, adamant that we needed to do this, and it was really, it could have gotten very contentious, but what happens is, we were able to do this business process model where everybody can see really visually what's going to happen on the wall. They get to have input into it. They get to ask all of their questions. And over a three-day period in the woods in Wisconsin in a retreat center, we modeled out this entire process. And to this day, they're not really threatened by it. You know, it's had its moments, but overall, it's been a non-threatening experience. And in fact, some of the nursing home advocates have come back later, and they've said, Krista, I wish everybody in government would do what you do because you're transparent. We know what you're up to. And I say, yeah, I think that would be smart if they did that. Because when you're transparent with someone, even if it's going to impact them, maybe negatively, at least it's predictable for them, and they know it. And I think when you're trying to hide stuff is where you get yourself into trouble. Okay, so next step, how process modeling supports the Lean Kaizen. So the first thing you do is, so the way Kaizen works is you identify something that needs a process improvement. You know, it might be that you want to reduce the cost of copying. It's something as simple as that. Or it might be you have to design a new program and it's got to be up by next Thursday, right? I mean, we've done that, believe it or not. Right after the shutdown, my team had 52 days to roll out a program because it passed in the middle of the night at the legislature. And the very first thing we did was a week after we came back from that shutdown, we scheduled a business process modeling session with all the stakeholders and designed that program. And within about 48 days, it was up and running. So you can do it, you know, if you have good disciplined approaches. So you identify a program need or a process improvement need. You identify everybody that needs to be at the table. Now, you're not going to get everybody necessarily, but sometimes you can also then later identify more, and I'll talk a little bit later about using additional stakeholder strategies. We don't use Visio, which is a tool you put these swim lanes in. We don't use them during business process modeling sessions, and the reason is they're hard to see. You cannot, as a projector, using a projector, make them big enough for everybody to see. You're going to have a lot of boomers in the room that are, you know, have progressive bifocals. They have to be able to see it. So we use very large sticky sheets that we put up on the wall and very dark black brand new markers. And we literally draw everything on the wall, and that's Stephanie and a colleague of hers. And then we have somebody sitting on the side doing these Visio diagrams. And at that point, when you start, you have to define who's a part of the process. So the first thing you start out with is, okay, well, you guys are probably developing a product that's going to maybe serve consumers or professionals. So the very first thing you got to figure out is who's buying the product. And then they're a swim lane. And then you got to figure out, well, who's delivering the product to them? That's a swim lane. Then you got to figure out, well, who's doing the operations or the marketing? That's a swim lane. All of those are swim lanes, and then you start identifying the process. So that's how we actually start putting together a business process model. If you go to the next slide, I just have a quick caveat here that I want to do to introduce the group to what's called the seven wastes. Now, a part of the Kaizen Lean process is something called the seven wastes, and it's absolutely critical. When you learn about Lean, you're going to learn about how Toyota approached all this. And you know, Toyota's had its moments recently, but frankly, they are darn good cars. I honestly just bought one, and I love my car, and my car loves me. But, you know, Toyota is really a well-run organization, and they started this. There was a engineer there that created it, and it really stands for, or they used the word MUDA. So the waste represent MUDA, which is futility, usefulness, or wastefulness. We don't usually use those terms. We like to kind of turn it around as a positive and a strengths-based approach, and we talk about adding value. Does this process add value? And if something adds value, then you need to add it to the process. Adding value means you're going to get more profit, or you're going to reduce waste, or it's absolutely critical to the process. If something doesn't add value, then your goal when you're doing your modeling is to work to fully eliminate it. Now, an example of that is one of the seven wastes, and I'll talk about them on the next slide, is review. And managers are a great problem in the process. We create a lot of waste, and I know I do too. I tell people I'm the Martha Stewart of putting good programs out the door. I want it to look really good, and I get embarrassed when our products look shoddy. I really do. And so I like to see everything that goes out the door. And I also like to know what's going out the door. Some of it's just knowing, right? And what I can do is I can really hamper the process. And of late, in the last 5 years, I've been trying to get better at not wanting and having to look at everything and trying to know what can go out without my review and what has to have my review, because I don't want to create waste. But it's hard. It's hard as a manager. Yeah, I want to see the stuff, right? And so part of my process is to try to eliminate when I don't need to do a review, do I really need to see it? Can I learn about it later, right? Because otherwise I'm just creating waste. So the Japanese describe identifying waste as learning to see. So as you're going along and you're doing business process model, you have to train your brain to learn to see the waste that you either might be creating in a new process or trying to eliminate in an old one, but you have to see it to eliminate it. So on the next slide, this is a graphic of the seven wastes, and you can see what they are. Overproduction, so too much stuff that doesn't get sold. That's waste. You know, it's too much produced inventory leads to too much inventory. And then the inventory waiting on the docks, not getting to the stores, right, not getting to be sold. That's waste. Because the more something waits, the older it gets, and the less relevant it is to the product world generally. Motion, having something travel a lot of times. So you can really see the manufacturing influence in this. You know, if something has to travel six places, but you could eliminate it and it only has to have three handoffs, you know, think about a relay. At the Olympics, we were watching the relays this last week, and you know, if you had six people in a relay, it'd be a lot slower than if you had four, right, going around. It's the same concept. And then transportation to and from something, then rework if it's not working well, and then overprocessing the development of a product. So these are all part of the waste process. On the next slide then, one of the things I wanted then to transition into is why you want to have stakeholders at the table. And I mentioned the fact that when you've designed a workflow, you're really making the entire process potentially transparent. And you need to know that, by the way, because not everybody wants to have it all transparent all the time. And so there may be some things that aren't transparent or shouldn't be. And Stephanie is a master at saying, let's put that on the parking lot. And sometimes you're going to need to do that. But most of all, the goal will be is make as much transparent as possible in the process. The other thing, I guess, is that when people are at the table and they're designing the process, they really feel like they're a part of the consultation of it and that they're part of consensus. We really use all of this now to build consensus among stakeholders, and it really works well. I can tell you we had 35 people, I think, was the size of the room, developing this transportation system for vets. And it was really complicated, and there were people that from the Department of Transportation that didn't believe in any of this and didn't want to be there, and they were angry and crabby. And really, through our facilitation and modeling, we got the group to really come to a decent, doable, click-to-call system that at least was a step forward, right? It was an additional new phase of moving towards a fully blown, decent transportation communication system. So it maybe you don't get to exactly where you want to go right away, but you might make a baby step, and that's important too. So on the next slide, so there are other reasons you want to do these workflow designs. You're going to appear more professional to the purchaser. If you have a business flow that you can say, oh, do you want to know how this works? We've got workflows we can send you. I mean, we've sent these all over the nation. We've sent them to advocates. We've sent them to stakeholders. And people, you know, I've had a lot of people call me about Return to Community. We've helped something like 37 states learn about Return to Community. And the first thing I do is I send our models. Here's how it works. And they can go through it, and they can see it, and it's really clear to them. You know, a lot of people work off of pictures. They don't work off of text or books, and that really helps. And, of course, we're able to reduce errors. Staff have far more predictability. When we train our staff, we show them the business models. We take them out there and say, here's how it works. And they're at the table when we design it. In fact, I think in 2 weeks we have a business process modeling session. We're going to redesign Return to Community. And all of the community living specialists are going to be there, and they're going to have input into it. And they're excited about it. Testing the process works much better. And then, of course, you're going to have a higher quality product, which reduces your risks and reduces lawsuits. So these are all the reasons to do clear workflow design. So now I'm going to transition it over to Steph, who's going to talk about BPM 2.0 and how to put a model together.
Great. Thank you. So I'm going to start. I won't read to you exactly from the slide about BPM 2.0, but I do want to point out a couple things for each bullet. In the first one, you'll see bullet business process modeling. It talks really about two players. There's the subject matter experts and the people who know modeling. And while they say it most commonly that a team does the business process modeling of both people who know the modeling and people who know the subject, I would say you have to have both people. I've had people who have tried to put together a model who have never done it before, and we've had to have quite a bit of discussion about how to make that look a little nicer. And at the same time, me, if I don't know a subject, it's hard for me to sit down and business process model something because I'm not going to have all the ins and outs of that process or the system or just those little quirks that happen. And so it may not come out as complete or as concise or as accurate as it needs to be. So it's so important to have all those players available. I will say at times this is mainly for tools, I think, and databases. It talks about using event logs. It is possible to put together business process models that way, but I think it's so important to actually talk to people as well to see how do things really work. Because I know a lot of times if there's processes that have been in place for years and we ask someone how it works, and document that, we're actually missing quite a few steps of things that people have done to make up for something that maybe doesn't work quite right in the system. So that's why it's really important to make sure you have that face-to-face communication as well and that input by those subject matter experts. So when we're using business process modeling 2.0, a lot of times we are looking at specifically a process. We want it to be right. We want it to work for everyone. Obviously, in most cases, we're going to have more players than just ourselves. And so we need to make sure that it works for everyone. So we want it to be efficient. We want to reduce costs. And as Krista talked about, the weight. We want to make sure that if I'm passing a document off to someone else who needs to do something with it, that that's as efficient as possible and it's not sitting somewhere and that person misses that. So it's getting all of those pieces documented. I will say as well, too, that having the management involved is so important and to have that buy-in. And I cannot tell you how many times sitting in a business process modeling session, especially with these interested stakeholders, as Krista called them, having Krista there as well to help facilitate that process in addition to myself. The other thing that happens with BPM 2.0 is you can see that last bullet about leading to marketing and communications and training. When you have a process, it's so easy to go through and look at each step and say, oh, okay, here's where we're saying that this person's going to get a letter, get a pamphlet. What is that actually going to look like? Or we're changing the process for this group of folks. For example, for pre-admission screening, hospitals are moving from a paper-based to an online system. How do we get that communication out to all the hospitals in Minnesota? And then also training. It was a new thing for staff as well as hospitals. So what are we going to do? Are we going to do videos? Are we going to do step-by-step? So by looking at those pieces, you can easily point those out. So going to the next slide, one of the things that makes business process modeling so easy to read as well is their symbols, and very simple symbols. I will say you'll see, or you will see in a little bit, it can get pretty complex. I don't use all those when I do business process modeling. But there's really some main ones. So the first is an event. So you need to have a start and an end to any process. That's the biggest thing, and that's usually what we start with. We say to the group, or if we sit down before and say, okay, if we're going to business process model, where does it start? Does it start with, for example, with the senior linkage line, does it start with someone calling us? Or if you're working with the county, is the end process someone gets a support plan? So it's really important that you have that start and end date. And then any expectations, are there things that are going to come up in between? There's also activities. So what's the process or the task? These are the most important pieces. This is where you're going to see the communications that need to come out, the marketing or the training or the changes to the tools that are needed. So really documenting, when do I document a call, or when do I hand someone a piece of paper, or when do I contact another person to help me assist a consumer, for example. So it's really important that all those processes and tasks are documented as well. And then finally, you'll see the gateway. So this is where paths come together or part, and we use what we call a decision point, so you'll see that diamond shape in there. And that's really to say, okay, this can go two ways. And I'll talk a little bit about happy paths. But this is really where we could say, you know what, this could go either this way or this way. Or if I'm helping someone, if they are a veteran, I may take a different path than if they're not. And then if they're a veteran and they're over 65, I'm going to take even a different path. So these decision points and these gateways are so important to help really streamline a process to show which way am I going to go, or which way is the system going to go depending on the situation. So going to the next slide, this is an example of a process that was documented. So you can see application handling. You'll see the first diamond. There is a decision point. It also, then you'll see that blue step, checking for correctness. And then it goes to a diamond, and it could be, is the application correct? If it's not, which way is it going to go? Do we have to get the data? Do we have to send it back to the consumer? And if the application's correct, then in this case, then you could do a new shipment. And then from that shipment, then an invoice rebuild. And then you can see there's a couple paths that happen here in terms of an invoice going to the client and an invoice also being produced to send to the client. You can see some of the other symbols as well for when the other, when there are mailings, when there are emails, when there are things produced, and then the endpoint. So going to the next slide, I will say I have been doing business process modeling for years, and even this overwhelms me. So there are many, many shapes out there that can be used. A lot of them are used to demonstrate technology. There are shapes if you want to distinguish communication from electronic communication to a physical mailing, to a face-to-face discussion. So there are tons of symbols out there. I keep it pretty basic when I do business process modeling, but know that the more advanced you get and how you use this, whether it's for technology, whether it's for people, there could be lots of symbols out there. So this is just an example of what you may see. So going to the next slide, KISS, I don't know if everyone knows what this means, but we go by keep it simple, stupid. And I know that may sound kind of harsh, but it's true. And one thing that I talked about the happy path earlier is that when you're going through, especially when you have a group of stakeholders, maybe everyone has a different opinion. I can tell you we have 87 counties in Minnesota, and I guarantee you there are some processes they do 87 different ways. So what is the main process? What's the happy path? What happens 80% of the time? Let's document that. And Krista talked about the parking lot. If, okay, maybe this in a 1 in a million chance this could happen, let's put that on the parking lot so we have it in our mind, but we're not going to focus on it. Let's keep it simple. Let's keep it going and get through the process of what's really going to happen. So that's the main idea here. I'm going to turn it back over to Krista.
So if you go to the next slide, so what does this ultimately lead to? As Stephanie mentioned, you're going to have hopefully these swim lanes, which we'll show you some samples here, and you're going to be using the documentation to start producing stuff so that that either leads to the product or is the product. You know, for us, the product is a person called a community living specialist that goes out to somebody's house and produces a community support plan. So not only is it a person visiting someone, but it's also the support plan. And so there's multiple products that, you know, we end up delivering with these in-person services. So it's going to be business requirements that might change software. It's going to be training for staff where they're doing something differently, or maybe they're brand new and they have to learn it. And then it's going to lead to marketing. And part of what you learn from these business process models is who's your audience? Who's your customer base? And what is it that they need? And that's really going to, as you do the process models, these stakeholders are going to help you get to that. So on the next slide, I'm just showing you what our license plate looks like because that's just so exciting. But I wanted to point out that Minnesota, really, we say we're the land of 10,000 lakes, but we also say we're the land of 10,000 services. And so we're like local control central. And so when you bring stakeholders to the table, you got to bring a real large cross-section of people that represent the managed care entities, the providers that bill them, the advocacy membership organizations that represent them. You got to bring consumers, obviously, because they're the users of the product. And you got to bring government officials, the licensors, the compliance people. You know, I had a business process modeling session with where one of our compliance staff who's in charge at another agency was actually speaking quite negatively about our process, and she was trying to advocate for these providers. And I had to stop, go over there on a break, and whisper in her ear and say, hey, what's going on here? You need to really do this outside this meeting. And she kind of stopped and started over and did a little bit better. And you know what? After that, her and I have had the best relationship. So, you know, you're going to have a lot of people at the table possibly depending on your service design, or you may have very few depending on who's delivering it, especially in states where it's just state employees that do all of the delivery of the services. What a different kind of thing. But we're all local control in Minnesota, so we bring a lot of people to the table. So some examples of business process models on the next slides, we'll kind of go through them. So this first one is a new process model that we just did. It's fresh off the press. This is a business, so I also hold the designation of legal services developer for the state because we don't have a full-time person to do that. And I've been doing it since 1998. And one of the things we've been developing with our elder law section of the bar is a way for people who have dementia will be transferred into the senior linkage line to a couple of designated staff that are available on our chat tool, which if you're coming to the HCDS conference, we're doing a session on that. We can show you that. But it's a secure chat tool, and they get a free 30-minute consultation with a lawyer. And then if, you know, the lawyer will tell them, here's the stuff, you know, based on your situation that I think you need. And you can use my services or you can use somebody else's services. And they give them a list of lawyers that are available and send them off to the elder law section of the bar to find a referral. And, you know, we've had several people take advantage of this, and we just took it over from our University of St. Thomas Law School, who had students that were taking these calls. And so this is the model that we put together. We had lawyers in the room. We were in the room. We had staff from the linkage line, contact center staff, and this is what it looks like. So, again, it can be super simple, or it can be super complex. Let's go to the next one. And so this one is our pre-admission screening. If you go to the next slide, yep. So there's pre-admission screening in Minnesota, and you can see we've got a variety of different roles, and those each of those rows are called a swim lane. And at the very top is the senior linkage line, and then it goes on down because the senior linkage line processes the level one OBRA pre-admission screening requests. So you can see the differences there. If you go to the next one, that's the return to community protocol, and you can see that we have to break them into different sections here. So here's process three of four processes. So there, it's a complicated one, and it's just, you can see all the different tabs at the bottom. And so each step in the process, because these community living specialists work with these folks for up to 5 years and follow them, well, a quarterly follow-up is complicated, and it's not going to fit on, you know, one small section of a model. And so we had to do four different models. So you can see that each step in the process may be its own model, too. And again, the process itself kind of dictates what that's going to be. So the next one is care transitions referrals to senior linkage line. This is when hospitals make referrals into our form that we have online that's also the pre-admission screening form. And so we've modeled out what happens if a hospital wants to make a referral into us. And some of you may know that we're also the SHIP. And so hospitals can make referrals into us through this form to refer someone over for Medicare counseling. And so that's kind of part of this process. There are like five other things they make referrals into, but you can see it all on the model. So again, it's just different kinds of things that we would use this process for that we're trying to show you. The last thing I want to show you here, I think, is a sample, is an activity diagram, example five. And so an activity diagram is something that we tend to use a lot for software if we're making any changes to our software. This is kind of a logic decision tree model. It's similar to a business process model, but it's not a business process. It's a process in a software, and so it just kind of has a different framework. It goes up, down, and it's definitely a logic model. So a business process model is looking at all the processes, whereas this is looking at the logic decisions behind each section, if this, then that. And so we do a lot of activity diagrams, too, as well. And we wanted to show you what that looks like. We're not really covering that too much today, but if you go Google that out on the internet, you'll be able to find it really easy. Okay, next slide. When business process modeling doesn't work well. Well, we don't think it works well with really, really large groups. Now, I will tell you, we've had 50, 60 in a room, but a good 10, 15, 20 of those were area agency staff that were part of sort of us. You know what I mean? It was the Board on Aging and the area agencies as the aging network at the table. And a lot of the area agencies were really quiet and they weren't talking because they didn't want to speak because they weren't the advocates in the room. You know, they wanted to let the more charged stakeholders speak, which was smart. You know, they needed to really kind of, they didn't need to argue that day, right? They needed to listen because they are developing the product. And so what I would say to you is I would not use this for a group of 50. I'd use it for maybe a group of 25 to 30. If you have more than 50, I would start out with a World Cafe style and get some inputs, or show the 50 the model that you did, walk them through it, and then use a World Cafe style to get their feedback and input into the model. So that would be one way to handle that. But I wouldn't do super large groups. Whenever the ideas don't need to be specific and they're more policy-oriented, like you're trying to decide whether to do an online tool or a tool that needs the following three steps, you know, that's not really good for modeling. That's a decision that people need to come together and, you know, debate and consider, but it's not a process. And so business process modeling won't work well for that. On the next slide, when you're trying to decide who to bring to the table, think about who's in the process, you know, users, consumers, clients. We call them consumers, but I know for the disability world, they don't like that term so much. But we think of them as, you know, people literally consuming our product and we have to deliver for them. Providers, staff delivering a product, leadership and decision makers, associations, lobbyists and advocates, or legislators or governor's office. We don't get governor's office or legislators too much to come. But I think for some of you, if you're in the Lieutenant Governor's office, you may have some of these folks that really want to come. It just doesn't happen here so much. Okay, the next slide.
Krista.
So yeah.
Before you move forward, if we could just go back one slide, if you could clarify by what you mean by World Cafe style.
Oh, there's a World Cafe process that we use where you have a group of people at, let's say, seven tables, six tables. Why I said seven, I don't know. That's like a magical number. And you have maybe, six to eight people at each table, and you give them a set of questions to discuss, and you give them maybe 15 minutes, and you have a person at that table that's staying at that table the whole time, taking down notes. So the whole purpose is to gather feedback. So that goes for maybe, I don't know, half an hour to 45 minutes, and then that table gets up and moves and goes to the next table, so would they rotate? And then usually there's a new topic at the next table. So you might have six topics. And then that group talks about it for, you know, another 45 minutes. And then they get up again and they rotate again. And then they're talking about a new topic. And this person that's taking the notes at the table is gathering all the feedback. And then later the feedback is taken, consolidated, merged, and then considered and reviewed by the policymakers. It's a very effective model. I think it's probably easy to Google. But that's a feedback strategy. You know, they used to do the voting with the little clickers. It's almost like that, but there's a lot of discussion. And people like to talk. You know, in Minnesota, they love to talk. They want to be heard. And so the World Cafe model works really well for that. Does that help?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see. On the next slide, I already talked about that. So here's what you need for a BPM event. You need the paper for the wall. You need the facilitators, possibly two, some processing, some to watch the audience. You're going to need scribes and recorders for the modeling. You're going to have people creating the Visios at the side tables. Usually we have one or two. If it's going fast, you need two to keep up. And then you'll need a note taker that's taking notes handwritten on the side. So you need a good large number of people to make this happen to get all of the documentation. On the next slide, you'll see the models get put into Visio. This is Microsoft Visio, and pretty easy to use. You just grab the symbols, put them on there, type it in. It's all very easy to use. And you document the discussions, and then what we do is we send the Visio out for review in a PDF. We don't let them change it. They have to see what came out of the meeting. And then we go through the processes of getting their feedback. We may very well have another meeting, like a meeting part two, where we go through the process and just step by step and say, here's what you said. And I'll tell you, when we were doing Return to Community, we had several meetings, and they would change it all the time, but not a lot. I mean, but they had changes. And so you want to have that process, you know, integrity in the process so that they can make changes if they want. I want to leave some time for questions, but we send it out by email. Sometimes we go on the road and take it on the road. If you go a couple slides forward, slide 31, you'll see what we've learned along the way. We think planners are good at this stuff and love it, but planners don't always make good facilitators. You're going to have multiple roles. It takes discipline, consistency, and constancy to do this successfully. People who want quick outcomes are going to get impatient, and they might get frustrated early on, but later they will be sold when they see it. They tend to be the outcomes-oriented people in the room, but they'll be convinced when they see it has potential for better results. People-oriented individuals like the consensus building, but they may need time to be convinced or to take it back and sell their coworkers or colleagues. And they might question if the right people in the room, so be thoughtful about who is present and then be willing to go and take it out to that other group later. And I've got some slides on here about that. On the next slide, I talk about going out and getting more feedback. You may need to do a road show. We do a lot of road shows. We take the models on the road. We go do eight sites across Minnesota, and we literally show them the models, and they love it. They love it because they can see what's going to change. I will stop there to leave some time for questions, hopefully.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. So, operator, if you could now please provide instructions for asking a question through the phone, that would be great.
We'll now begin the question and answer. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Name is required to introduce your question. Withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment, please, for your first question.
Okay, thank you. I'm checking back. We haven't had questions on the chat as of yet, but they tend to roll in once we give folks just sort of time to process.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question on the phone lines, please press star 1 and please record your name clearly when prompted.
And also, so I don't know, Krista, if you wanted to, I had sent out the attachments that you had shared, some of the sample documents. I didn't know if there was any.
We gave you some meeting samples of a meeting notice. We actually sent the models out in large-scale form so you can see what they look like. Some of you that work with Medicare, I was just thinking, we just finished a modeling of the entire Medicare appeals process from us to CMS and back, and it is a huge model.
Wow.
So if anybody ever wants to see that, we can send it. So, yeah, there's a lot of information for you there. You can see what a model looks like. You can take it and use it if you want to do the development of your own product. And maybe I can throw a question out and ask, you know, is anybody doing this now? Or is there anything that you've learned that you would want to share with us? I mean, we're always willing to learn about new processes. Or do you think that this has applicability as you're, because I think you're all developing products that you're going to maybe try to sell to health plans, if I'm correct, right? Or something like that?
Okay, and so while we wait for people to chime in response to that, we do have a couple of questions that have come in. First is, if you could explain how you have used this process with possibly with healthcare providers and payers, or if you have, and if so, what the response has been.
Okay, so managed care was definitely in the room at the Return to Community. They were in the room at the PASAR. Because they actually do the pre-admission screening themselves, and they didn't want us to take it over. They wanted to retain that because once somebody goes into a nursing home, there's a nursing home penalty that they have to pay if somebody stays in longer than I think it's 180 days. So they their per member per month goes down if they stay too long. So they want to keep that past our process. They want to hold on to that. And so they were at the table from the beginning to the end in designing that. We also had them at the table we helped do the money follows the person business process model with the health plan staff. It included the care coordinators, and then it was also the administrators of the health plans. And they were at the table and did the whole business process modeling session with us. So the one thing I'm thinking about, none of those ever had us trying to create a product that we might sell to them. I know that that's something you're thinking about. One of the things I would do is try to find some champions that you have that are already inside those agencies and tell them that you're maybe interested in a product testing approach, and would they be able to be a part of the product design because, you know, you'd really want their input. That might be a way to approach that. So I don't know if that helps, but.
No, it definitely does. Thank you. Okay, before we go on to these other ones, are there any questions on the phone?
I am showing no questions from the phone line.
Okay. So another question is, if you are aware of any resources for getting more training in Lean.
Well, the state of Minnesota does Lean training for its state employees. I would look around and see if your state's got somebody like that available. It's in our Department of Administration. Most of the states are doing some sort of performance management function now somewhere, and so you might look for that, like performance management, or you might. It's probably not going to be in your Department of Human Services or Department of Health. It's going to be somewhere else, kind of hidden. That, you know, it originally came out of our Department of Management and Budget. So you go and try and find those people if you can and then see what they suggest. We also have a group here called Watermark. I think they might be national. I'm not sure. But there's something like that out there. And we actually just brought them in to train my entire team on how to develop a use case use cases are for software. And I've sent my staff to go get BPM 2.0 training through Watermark. So that's definitely an option too. You know, Lean itself, there's a ton of options for training out on the internet. But if you can get it through one of your state agencies, I would do that. I'd start there.
Great. That's very helpful. And then another question here is asking if you're familiar with any software applications beyond Visio that is interactive between users to make edits and track changes in real time.
Oh, gosh. You know, we're big Visio users. You could probably use some sort of Google Drive, Google product. You could probably use something there. But nothing, I mean, okay, I won't say that. That's not true. There are business process modeling tools online that allow joint kind of changes of the documents, but I don't know that I would want to lose control of that myself. I'd want to keep control of that, so I would never send out a document that isn't in a PDF form. So unless you really hate Visio, I guess we would recommend it.
Okay. And now I'll go back to the operator and see if any questions have come in.
I still am showing no questions.
Okay. Okay, at this point, so that's all of the questions that we had in the chat. I will give it another minute or so before to see if there's any lingering thoughts or questions.
The one thing I would say is you've got our email at the end on the last slide. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to throw them out to us. We don't mind fielding those questions. Frankly, Stephanie's done modeling all over the place. Her and I were deployed to MNSHR, which is our state health exchange, and we got that call center up and running, and we did a ton of modeling with the health plan. Actually, now that I think about it, it was with the health plans. It was very political, very loaded. But again, we weren't selling a product. We were more building consensus with them. So always feel free to email us.
Thank you so much for that. And actually, we just had another one come in. So it's asking if you're, I guess, familiar with On the Mend, revolutionizing healthcare to save lives and transform the industry, and if you found that helpful.
What's it called?
Okay, so it says it's On the Mend, revolutionizing healthcare to save lives and transform the industry.
Well, I have not heard of it, but I'm Googling it right now just to see what it is. And you had that East Coast, On the Mend. That was really what I, okay.
Sorry.
That's all right, it made me laugh. So this looks like this is maybe some people that are trying to, one of the things about the healthcare industry, if we can go over a little bit, is we have always maintained here that one of the problems with healthcare is healthcare has no predictability. It can't figure out what it costs, and it doesn't have a good clear model of what it delivers. And that's interesting to me. And so it looks like this is an attempt by a couple of physicians to say, hey, you need to use lean techniques to do this. It's a very interesting book. I think it would be fascinating to try to get a read on this. And, yeah, I would buy this book and read it. It looks good. But healthcare has a problem. Nobody knows what it's really delivering. It's kind of hidden and not very transparent.
Right, right. Okay, I'll just check one more time. Let's see. Okay, I think that's it. So I just wanted to thank Krista and Stephanie again for joining us today and taking the time to present with us. I found it extremely informative, and just thank you again for all of the participants on the phone. All of the slides and the attachments that we talked about earlier were sent out prior to the webinar, so you have those. And if you do have any other questions following the webinar, please don't hesitate to reach out to myself or to Krista or to Stephanie. Their email addresses are on the last slide of the slide deck. So thank you both again so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks to everyone for joining us, and please enjoy the rest of your day. That will conclude our webinar.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.